GDPR is about the principle of privacy and data autonomy and other things. And here, definitely, this is in alignment with the principles of SSI. So one of those is autonomy and another one is privacy. And so those aspects are definitely going hand in hand. And the next question, so the right to be forgotten, the right to be deleted, all of these things are, of course, if I delete my credential from my own wallet, then that's that. So I have this kind of control that is basically being demanded rightfully by GDPR. And how we are handling the specific regulatory issues and questions that might come from it, that is something to see when we have the first real-world use cases.
Voices of the Data Economy, a podcast supported by Ocean Protocol Foundation. We bring to you the voices shaping the data economy and challenging it at the same time. We talk about breaking down data silos and equalizing access to data for all.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Voices of the Data Economy. And today we have Irene with us. Hello, Irene.
Hello, Diksha, and hello, everyone.
Hello. So why don't you tell us a bit about the space you work in here in Berlin?
Thank you. So in Berlin, I'm working with Yolocom, which is a company founded in 2014 that works on self-sovereign digital identities. And on top of that, I'm part of a couple of associations in varying positions to work with regulators about how to handle blockchain technology questions as well as digitalization in a meaningful manner.
Okay. And Yolocom particularly also works in the digital identity space. And this is a very common word that we hear from a lot of people, but not something that they really understand. So if you could give our listeners a little bit of background on what actually a digital identity is, and is it something that can be decentralized or should be rather?
Certainly. So I think identity is something that can go into a very large context. So identity politics is something I believe a lot of people have heard of. But it's more with the digital concept, it is a lot more about actually specificity. So everyone knows of the concept, one person, one vote, which is, you know, one of the central tenets about how we have started to arrange society and living together with each other. But with the digital sphere, we are now in an age where you cannot be 100% certain that the person or the entity you are interacting with right now is actually a person and B, a person distinct from the other one. So bots are happening, chatbots in the positive sense for customer service and other things. But the question is really one about trust. So in the digital sphere, how can we be sure that we are identifying the correct person and an actual human being as a person? And so the question here has turned a little bit away from one person, one vote, mm-hmm. and turned more or less into one person, one voice. And now the question is, how do we make sure that we can actually stay true to this idea of one person, one voice in the internet age? Mm-hmm. And so that is basically where we are headed, what we are working on. And should or can this be decentralized? Yes, it can. And I believe it must, because otherwise it's very hard to get back to this one person, one voice, one vote kind of ideal we are striving for.
And how can it be decentralized? If you could explain the process and what benefits could it actually have?
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of a question about how to decentralize or digitalize anything. And the big thing is that I think digital identity is something we are all with online banking, with logging into different accounts, be it social media or be it a service platform. We all know how to handle that. And how to decentralize is the question that at the moment we are seeing a lot of platforms holding our account information and then having to assure that data stays private and that there's no leak and that they are handling it in a proper manner. And this has been working so far, but we are seeing more and more problems. And so the idea to have decentralized autonomous identities that we can, where we have again, basically the power of our own data or the data we are generating online, is to basically go into something that we are also slightly familiar with from the physical world, and that is basically a division of power. And this is where the concept of self-sovereign identity comes into, where basically SSI as a concept, and I heard that some of your hearers and listeners might already be familiar with the concept, is to basically divide the responsibilities of the data involved within digital identity among three parties. So possibly myself as an identity holder, I have it in a wallet app or something similar on my smartphone. I'm storing all the information I need and want. And where do I get the trusted information? That I get from a so-called identity issuer. So, for example, in my case, my municipality would give me a digital credential for my phone, for the wallet in my phone, to say I am actually a registered member of this community. I live here. I was born here. I am paying my taxes here and things like that. And I get all this information stored in different credentials on my phone, in my wallet. And when then there is need, for example, if I want to order something online and they need to know that I'm 18 or older so that I can enter a contract, they don't need to know where was I born. They don't need to know what gender am I. They don't need to know on what date was I born. They only need the information, yes, I am of age. And so then I would be able to show this one credential that I am an adult, and a identity verifier can then show them the information was issued by an authority. The information has not been tampered with. So this information is acceptable and you can proceed to interact with each other and enter into a contract in this case. So this division of power between me as identity holder, a trusted authority as identity issuer, and a service provider as identity verifier, this is basically the way to have this division of power. And that would mean that information about my identity is stored in a decentralized manner only in my phone and nobody else has it.
And how many digital identities can a person have or should have?
That is, again, the question about how do you basically define a digital identity. So how many credentials, how many information or data sets about my identity should a person have? As many as they want to. So which sport do they like? Which club are they a member of? What kind of health information do they have? What is their favorite coffee place where they are registered to get a bonus or a rebate when they have had 10 coffees? So all of that can be stored within your identity wallet, but only you have this information, and also you can only use it once, so to speak. So every person, because of one person, one voice, should only have one identity, but it needs to be able to, you know, become pseudonymous. So being able to use a pseudonym in order to make sure that the way we are behaving ourselves online doesn't have to change too drastically. So if I want to, you know, participate in a hobby blog forum, whatever, I don't want to go into that possibly with my full legal name, because this is something my employer doesn't need to know about. And so that's fine to use a pseudonym. And the question is, how can we still ensure that I have this sense of anonymity without, maleficent entities trying to use it in order to duplicate their voices and pretend their single opinion is shared by 10,000 other people? Because this is the, you know, worst case scenario where in democratic ways, on in social media bias and other things, or even in product reviews. If you say, I really want to push my own product, I will pretend I am 10,000 different satisfied customers. Or if I would want to really hurt a rival, I could say I'm 10,000 dissatisfied customers. And in order to prevent that, it needs to be possible to have, you know, anonymous data, but not in a way that prevents the one person, one voice credo.
Okay, so it's basically like diversifying my data points into different segments, in simple words.
In a way and in a way not, because the data point would always be your identity wallet on your phone or which any other device you are choosing to store it in. But basically, the different facets and aspects of your personality and your identity are basically stored in one credential. And only this specific credential that you need and want to use here actually goes out into the world and is shown to the outside world.
Okay. I think probably I have to use it to understand it even better. But yes, it does give a sense, and I learned something new as well. Another question is on the side of like, what's actually, are people really using it today? Because, you know, we read a lot of stuff on it's actually helping citizens, it's going to help citizens, it's very good for the state, it's going to solve real world problems. And do you see that digital identities have actually solved problems already, or where do you see it solving the socioeconomic problems?
I think it is definitely helping in certain areas already. So this is, of course, not a fully decentralized identity, but for example, there are so many examples, but for example, the app I have for the train service in my country, which is in Germany, the Deutsche Bahn, I am able to get updated information about my tickets. I can do the reservations there. I can switch reservations. And I am doing that because I have a digital identity account with them. And the same way we are using public transportation, or basically rent a bike and other options. So mobility sharing services, there I'm also using my identity, a digital identity with them in order to use their services. And I think this has made a lot of people's life easier. Mm-hmm. And even on the grander, though blander scale, and I have a digital ID with the tax authorities, and that lets me handle my taxes from the comfort of my computer at home without having to, you know, pay for a service of somebody else to handle it for me, or to basically be necessitated to get the different forms from the tax office, but I can just, you know, do it all online. And all of that is already a digital identity. And all of that is already very, very useful in making things easier and in some cases more accessible. And with what has just been described about decentralized digital identities, that is something that is just starting the world over. And Germany is currently starting a pilot project, which we are, as Jolocom, a part of. So they are called Secure Digital Identity. Mm-hmm. And that is a large scheme where basically for 3 years, different companies and consortia and groups are working on providing this kind of decentralized, secure SSI identity to citizens in order to help with municipal services and other things. So that is something that's going to start later this year and then go for 2 or 3 years, depending on the different project.
And how do you feel like regulations, probably say GDPR and the whole concept of digital identities are, you know, go with each other? Are they really friends, I would say?
Yeah, I would say absolutely. I mean, GDPR was about privacy preservation and basically making sure that control over our private personal data doesn't go to unauthorized entities. Be they as beneficial or benevolent as they want to be, and there are certain data sets they shouldn't have access to, because if they have access to it, it's always possible that less benevolent entities get access to it. Mm-hmm. And so GDPR is about the principle of privacy and data autonomy and other things. And here, definitely, this is in alignment with the principles of SSI. So one of these is autonomy, and another one is privacy. And so those aspects are definitely going hand in hand. And the next question, so the right to be forgotten, the right to be deleted, all of these things are, of course, if I delete my credential from my own wallet, then that's that. So I have this kind of control that is basically being demanded rightfully by GDPR. And how we are handling the specific regulatory issues and questions that might come from it, that is something to see when we have the first real-world use cases. But so far, I don't see any, I don't see any kind of problem with those two going hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And the only other question is really, how do the practicalities look like later on?
Yeah, I think this is also like a misconception that I listen to and read sometimes, that what is on the blockchain cannot be deleted, so it's not safe. I mean, it's really people literally writing these articles out there. And this is a question that comes. So yeah, that helps, whatever you just answered, in terms of having a wallet and having control on it and, you know, knowing what to delete. And as long as you can do that, it is it is regulated. So the next...
Can you...
You want to add something?
And just wanted to check whether there was a question in there or not.
No, it was rather a comment. Okay, so another aspect probably that is something worth talking about is the ID 2020 or Digital Identity Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And initiatives like these, where we see that the role of big tech is very prominent, like, you know, companies like Microsoft or Accenture. And I think probably a little bit of view that you could give on how the ecosystem can work together in the world of digital identities, and what is really the role of all these big companies in solving problems through decentralization?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very broad question, but I sort of really want to understand the ecosystem.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair. It's a good question, definitely. I think actually there are two questions in there. So the first thing is that what kind of digital identity aspects are we facing here? And that is certainly broader than just the one about natural persons. So your digital identity and mine are, of course, something that is very, very important, not just to us, but for everyone to keep those private. But within the digital society that we are steadily growing into, we also have to consider digital identities for companies and other legal persons. And then also, of course, we have digital identities for devices. So my smartphone has an ID, my notebook does, every other router and internet equipped device has one. If we are looking at how many cars by now have a digital identity because they are interacting, and if we are looking at the idea of self-driving cars, that's going to go through the roof. Same as so-called smart or devices or the Internet of Things.
Hmm.
So here we have millions and billions of digital identities already in place and probably multiplying exponentially in the next couple of years. So in order to handle this kind of influx of data and identity actors and entities, that is something where we need big tech, definitely, just in order to be able to handle all of these things. And they have basically the infrastructure in place to scale on this kind of, with these kind of numbers. So on that side, it is absolutely understandable that big tech is getting on going in there,
mm-hmm.
simply because the market is going to be basically almost the same as the world's population, if not larger, because we have one person has more devices than just one. So this is an explanation of both why it's good that they are in this field and why it's natural and understandable that they want to move into this field. On the other hand, where do we need them and where might it give cause for concern is, of course, the idea, as mentioned earlier, that if you have central authorities able to access certain data, it can very quickly lead to the question of, do I want other people to have access to this data or to these devices? And in some cases, we might not care. And in some cases, we might want to care very, very much, because you always have to think these things, especially from the regulatory point of view, from the worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a list of people, where do they live? What are their preferences? What's, for example, their health record or other things? Then I need to think, when I want to draft regulation, what if a maleficent person gains access to these data sets? So how can I prevent that? And so even if you have the best of intentions, regulators always have to be suspicious and draft law and regulation from that point of view. And so here, the good news is basically that actually the digital identity space is a lot more decentralized than just big tech.
Mm-hmm.
So one entity I would like to point your listeners towards, and yourself, of course, if you are interested, is the Decentralized Identity Foundation, abbreviated to DIF, because they are working very, very hard on creating both an understanding within the community and also an educational basis for interested individuals. What is important, what is interesting, and what is to watch out for with the entire sphere and space of digital identity. And they are also working with regulators and standardization bodies about making sure that all these considerations are being taken seriously. both from the technical point of view as well from the regulatory point of view. And so far in my conversations with regulators, that has led to a lot of understanding. So there's not a lot of interest also for regulators to have an oligopoly or monopoly on digital data sets. And so they are very much interested and supportive of creating this digital identity space in a decentralized manner, at least here in Germany and Europe, as far as I am informed.
Okay. And what is the role of, now let's talk a bit about Yolocom. Like, what is probably a role of company like Yolocom in this entire ecosystem? And where does it come into the picture? At what stage of digital identity ecosystem or the process of having a digital identity?
Yeah. Okay, thank you for that question. And the answer is a little bit tricky because particularly Yolocom is all over the place. Mm-hmm. So Yolocom was founded in 2014 and really basically founded with the express interest to of actually this understanding. If you have, if we are aware that digital identity is going to be very, very important in the future and everyone is going to be basically reliant on a good concept of digital identity, then we want to make sure that it's as society serving as possible and prevent as many of the dystopian possibilities as possible. And so Yolocom started out with this express intent to have a decentralized safe option for users. Mm-hmm. And then our team just got to work. So I'm one of the more recent members, but so Yolocom has been around for six, almost 7 years now.
Okay.
And has tried different aspects of these things. Mm-hmm. And is very strong supporter of self-sovereign identity. And also because we are a supporter of a decentralized approach and a community approach to these kind of questions, we are involved in quite a lot of these foundations and institutions in order to support them finding solutions that are good for everyone. And from the product point of view, we are offering a wallet, so an app you can download in all the usual suspect stores online, where you can store the credentials you might be issued from other, identity issuer trust anchors. And so in the beginning, we were developing protocols and methods for all these things, but by now we are focusing on the wallet and on basically supporting the standardization of the space and also in broadening the space, so to speak.
So do you work more particularly with the public sector or also with the private sector, or is it both?
I would say it's both. So, I mean, personally, because my background is slightly more on the legal issues and things, I am handling a lot of those conversations mm-hmm. together with my colleagues. But we also had the first couple of private sector pilots and also the first private sector customer, so to speak, to provide tailor-made solutions. So one of the first pilots was, for example, in the Netherlands, a municipality wanted to try out that citizens could enter the local swimming pool at a discount or even for free compared to tourists. So if you were participating in the program, you could basically use your wallet to scan at the ticket entry and then get the discount or the get in for free. And so by having your identity stored on your phone with mm-hmm. the credential, yes, I'm a citizen registered here, you were able to go in and others weren't or didn't get the same discount and things like that. And in a similar way, we were working with other companies to try a bike pool or a scooter pool so that basically employees of the company were able to use a mobility sharing network that others weren't. And so this is something you can read up on our blog mm-hmm. if you want to and are interested in. And this is also the way we are moving forward. So, of course, on the one hand, you have municipalities, which is more on the public side. And on the other hand, you have companies.
And how challenging...
So it's a large variety of use cases. Yeah, sorry. Mm-hmm.
And how challenging is it to actually have a user experience for something like this? And would you call it like... a smooth, a seamless user experience? I mean, how simple is it to actually have a digital identity if someone wants today?
Okay, so if you are really interested in this, I am very happy to forward you to one of my colleagues who is a mentally great product design and UX designer. So happy to forward that and facilitate that conversation. But overall, I think you might want to ask to ask a slightly different question. So a digital identity is something all of us already have. So I don't think anyone needs explanation about how to set up an account and then to use that account. But if we are talking about, for example, using an SSI wallet, it's quite similar. Of course, you need to get yourself comfortable with the entire concept. So setting up the account in your Yolocom wallet, for example, is slightly a few more steps than usual. So it's not just generate a password and things like that. Mm-hmm. You are being issued a private key, for example, which you need to write down and in order to, in case your phone gets stolen, lost, or is broken and things like that. That is something your listeners might be familiar with again. Mm-hmm. But after a while, once you are set up and have walked through the 8 to 10 steps, then you are, it's basically as simple as scanning and using and showing QR codes.
Okay. So I didn't know it's that simple, but good to know. And I also saw the demo actually in one of your blogs. I told you that, you know, I went into a rabbit hole, like reading all of those use cases. It was so interesting. So I think that's a good note to wrap up. Also a positive note that it's simple if we all want a digital identity tomorrow. And what is it, Irene, that you would like, our listeners to, if there's something you could wrap up with, like one takeaway, probably you would want everybody to, if there was one takeaway that could be there from this episode, what is it that you would want to leave the listeners with?
I am very bad at making these things short, but on the first one is that if they have any kind of choice, they want their digital identities to be decentralized, because it makes everything much more robust and much more secure for them. Mm-hmm. And also that maybe counterintuitively, regulators and governments are working in this direction. So that is a good note. But also in order to take action, try these things out, give people feedback, give both the programmers feedback about what works for you and what doesn't, and also start demanding, if you're in a position to do so, your representatives and others and your municipalities to provide the infrastructure for this. So if you are outside of Germany, for example, or in countries where these things are just being set up, mm-hmm. make sure that people are moving in the decentralized direction. And if you are in other areas, make sure or start lobbying and claiming your right to a secure internet connection to be able to do and handle these things. And feel free to try these things out.
Basically, create awareness and care about your data. So
thank you for providing the brevity that I like.
I think that's pretty much the premise of most episodes that we do, and glad to know that this aligns with that as well. And it was great having you, Irene, and thank you for taking our time today evening. And I know we are in challenging situations because of corona and lockdown and we are all working from home, so really appreciate your presence today here, online presence.